Okay, let's start again quickly. The Pasuk Lamed Dalet, basically we're going to just run through the various different ketores, the incense which is brought every day, and especially on Yom Kippur. Okay, so Pasuk Lamed Dalet, V'yem Hashem Omeshe Kachach Osamen, take for yourself spices, not of Shcheles, Chelben Osamen, V'yin Azaka, Bad B'vad Yihyeh, and obviously the Chazal tell us there are 11 spices. The Pasuk over here is not mentioning all 11. There's only not of Hashchelus, Chelben, Asam, and Veinazaka. You know, Bad Bevad Yihyeh, it should be all of equal weight. But the Mefarshim explained, why is the Torah only mentioning these four or five if there's really 11? Because these were the primary spices. But Sisa is a Ketores, you should make it into a spice compound, meaning Ketores. Reikach Maise, Rekeach, the handwork of a perfumer. Memulach Torah Kedesh, it should be thoroughly mixed, pure and holy. And the Mefarshim explain that it doesn't mean the Ketores should be holy, because it's understood. A holy person had to make the incense. You can't have an impure person working in the Beis Hamikdash. So what it means, Tahar, means that it has to be like pure olive oil. You know, the virgin olive oil. The same thing, the spices had to be the choicest spices. So Tahar doesn't mean here pure versus impure. It means star, that it means has the pure spices, meaning the best quality spices. V'shachakta mimeno hadek, and you should grind it finely. You have to grind it very finely. V'nasata mimeno, you should take from it l'fnei ho'edus ba'el ma'ed, before the testimonial tablets in the tent of the meeting. Asher ivayid l'cha shomu, Hashem appears to Moshe Rabbeinu, Kedesh Kadoshim Tielachem, should be holy of holies. Because as we learned, the Mizbeach HaKedesh was the inner Mizbeach, closer to the Holy of Holies. And that's what the Torah says, not on the outer Mizbeach where they brought the sacrifices, but rather the smaller Mizbeach which was called the Holy Mizbeach. Okay, HaKedesh Asher Taseh, and then he says like this, the Ketores that you will make, the incense that you shall make, b'maskunta, in its proper proportion, le'isasu lachem, you're not allowed to make an imitation for yourself, kedesh tia lachal Hashem, it should be holy. And this is a negative commandment about the spices, that you're not allowed to make a replica of the spices in the proper quality, because it has to be designated only for the Beis HaMikdash, not for personal usage in any way whatsoever. Any person that will make it, the similar ketores of the Beis HaMikdash, to smell it, v'nichras mi'ama, will be cut off from his people. So basically it's capital punishment. Now, there's a number of interpretations over here when the Pasuk says you should put it before the Oel Moed Kodesh Kodoshim. So Rashi learns it refers to the daily ketores, which was brought twice a day. A little bit in the morning, a little bit in the evening. The Ramban and other Mefarshim learned that this refers to the ketores that the Kohen Gadol brought on Yom Kippur, that he went into the Holy of Holies. He brought the ketores into the Holy of Holies, and then he left it there for a while. Later on in the day, he went back in to take it out. So the question over here is, and both, they're not necessarily arguing, because both were true. There was a ketores he brought every day, morning and evening. There was a ketores he brought on Yom Kippur. And both are correct.
Do we know how long it took them to make it? Like the incense, how long did it take to make it?
How long? Here he goes, elaborates in the whole thing, the 11 spices, and there was...
To grind them fine.
And then they redid it again, and it says, Allah merit aglayim yafinla, which simply would mean that urine would be good to mix the spices, but you don't do it because it's not respectful. Other mefarshim learn, by the way, halo merit aglayim doesn't mean urine. Merit aglayim means there's a place called raglayim, a well. And merit aglayim means water from the well of raglayim. So it says, why wouldn't you use that for the water? Because the name itself is not nice. You know, it's not that the name is not nice to use such water from such a well in the Mishkan. Because
what page do you want?
I'm on 488. Okay, and again, to go into the old status, it's not that practical today. it's very difficult the way they ground it up and reground it, and you know, the various different things.
Is the Ketores of Yom Kippur and the Ketores of every morning and afternoon?
It's more or less, yeah, it's the same. Yeah, because we say in davening, Shebehem Machnis Kein Goldom Melech Chafli B'yem HaKippurim. So the 11 spices were also the way it was done in Yom Kippur. But here we say, Marzidin and Machteshes Be'erev Yem HaKippurim. In the morning davening, we say the Easter before Yom Kippur, they brought it back.
By the way, he brought it back from where to where?
No, they just put it back into the grinder. Listen, we say this every day in davening. Here it says, the rabbis have taught, how was the incense prepared? How was the ketores prepared? It weighed 368 monim. Between all of the 11 spices, it weighed that. 365 corresponding to each number of days of the solar year. Which is interesting, because usually Torah goes by the lunar calendar. By the Ketores, which is a transformation of evil to Kedusha, so then you go by the solar year that the Goyim count to, because we want to transform secularism, you know, to Torah. One mana for each day. Half a mana offered in the morning, half towards the evening. The three other manim, from which the Kohen Gadol took two handfuls into the Holy of Holies in Yom Kippur. These three manim were put back into the grinder on the day before Yom Kippur, and ground again very thoroughly to make the incense extremely fine. That means the Ketores of Yom Kippur was double ground to make it even more than that. And then it says like this. Then he goes through the 11 spices, and he says like this. If cypress wine was not available, strong white wine might be used instead. Salt of Sodom, a fourth of a cob, minute quantity of smoke-raising herb. Okay, then it says like this. If, however, honey was added, the incense becomes unfit. Because the Torah says, Kol sar v'chol devash, any yeast or any honey was never allowed to be brought. Not only that, im chiser echad mikol sar mena, if somebody missed any one of the 11 spices from putting it in, also chayiv misa. And by the way, the water of raglayim, even in the English, it doesn't say mei raglayim as the simple meaning of urine, but it means the water of raglayim. But because it wasn't respectful to bring water from a well called raglayim, it's called mei raglayim, which normally means urine, it's not respectful to even the name to use it inside the Beis HaMikdash. And then he says like this, Rav Nosson says, while the Kohen was grinding the incense, the overseer would say, grind it thin, because the rhythmic sound is good for the compounding of the spices. Which is it, when the Kohen was grinding it, the guy said, grind it, that the voice helped the spices.
It was clean water, right?
Huh?
It was clean water.
Yep.
So they spend all morning to make the spices then. And all afternoon to make the afternoon spices.
Right. So that was basically the way it worked. And we'll continue because, again, it's not... Until Mashiach comes, it's not happening.
You're still waiting, huh?
Still waiting, yeah. Okay, Lamed Aleph starts a lot of interesting things for the rest of the parsha. Vayidaber Hashem Moshe Leimer, Hashem spoke to Moshe, saying... I have called by name, Betzalel ben Uri ben Chur lemata Yehuda. Now Hashem is telling Moshe Rabbeinu as follows. You thought, and this is how the Mefarshim explained it, you thought that because I told you, make the Aron, make the Mizbeach, make this, that you're going to be the one making it. Hashem says, that's not happening. You're not making anything. Hashem said to Moshe Rabbeinu, the Medrash says, I know you want to make it, but it's not befitting for a king to work. Even though this is for Hashem, and they bring down interestingly, but Shlomo HaMelech also didn't do anything for the Beis HaMikdash. Shlomo HaMelech did not do any of the actual construction of the Beis HaMikdash. Hashem didn't want to show the respect to the king, because there's a halacha that Melech Shemochel Al Kvodo Ein kvodo mochel. A Nasi, a Jewish leader, is an argument in the Gemara if he could be mochel his kovod. You know, forgive his respect. But a king, even if he forgives his respect, it's not forgiven. For instance, a scholar can forgive his respect. You know, a scholar can say, don't stand up for me. Your parents can forgive the respect. A king, even if he says, don't stand up for me, you have to stand up anyway. There's only one person, I think, that says in Allah doesn't stand up for a king, and that's a mourner. A person in Avelus. A person sitting Shiva doesn't stand up for anybody. That's Allah, he doesn't stand up for anybody. He says...
And Kohen Gadol, when they were...
Kohen Gadol, alone, the king stood up for the Kohen Gadol. In public, Kohen Gadol stood up for the king, yeah. Now, Bezalel ben Uri ben Chur. Now, Chur, who is Chur? Chur was Miriam's son. Moshe Rabbeinu had a sister by the name of Miriam. Her husband was Kalev ben Yefuneh. Miriam's, the good spy with Yeshua ben Nun, the head of Yehuda, Kalev ben Yefuneh was Moshe Rabbeinu's brother-in-law. He married Miriam. The Gemara says, at the time, just parenthetical, at the time Kalev ben Yefuneh married Miriam, she was sickly ugly. She was ugly from illness. And he married her L'shem Shemayim, because she was Moshe Rabbeinu's sister. I mean, brother. Yep, she was Moshe Rabbeinu's sister. She was Moshe Rabbeinu's sister. Good. And later it says, in the Gemara Seita says that afterwards Hashem healed her and she became very beautiful. So Kalev ben Yefuneh married Miriam. They had a son, Chur. Okay? Now, so Chur was Moshe Rabbeinu's nephew. Right? Now, this is Chur's grandson. Bezalel ben Uri ben Chur. So, he was Moshe Rabbeinu's great-great nephew. At the time he was appointed, the Gemara says that Bezalel was 13 years old. When Hashem appointed Bezalel to oversee the engineering of the Mishkan, he was 13 years old. But he was extremely, extremely brilliant and holy. In fact, Bezalel, the Rechaim HaKadosh says, here, why is the Torah saying Bezalel, Ben Uri, Ben Chur, all these things? So he says like this, Bezalel means Tzel Lokel. Okay, he made a shadow for God. Meaning he made a home for God. Ben Uri, what do you mean Uri? Or, he built a Mishkan which was the Or for God. Ben Chur, that the Jews became Ben Chorin from the sin of the eagle. So the Arachayim HaKadosh explains, of course, he was Bezalel, the son of Uri, the son of Chur. I mean, that was their names. But what are the names that the Torah seems to be emphasizing over here? That why we're picking Bezalel, Ben Uri, Ben Chur? Because the names showed on the character of the person. He created at Tzel an image, a shadow for God in the Beis HaMikdosh. Ben Uri, he made a place where God can reveal his Ord, his light. And Ben Chur, he was made Chorin from the eagle, because the Mishkan forgave for the golden calf. It says, and also the Daskin Melatesis says, why does it say Bezalel ben Uri ben Chur? If you look at Aliyov, in the next Pasuk, it says, Pasuk Vav, we'll get there in a minute, but he says, I pick Aliyov ben Achisamach, Lamate Dun. He doesn't say his grandfather's name. It says Aliyov, the son of Achisamach. Here the Torah says, Bezalel ben Uri ben Chur. So the Daskenu Mibalatayis says, why is the Torah mentioning the grandfather of Bezalel and not the grandfather of Aliyov? And he says very simple. Chur was killed by the eagle. Miriam's son. Aaron and Chur, in last week's parsha by Amalek, Aaron and Chur were together with Moshe keeping his hands up by the Amalek battle. But it says in the Medrash, that it says later in Chumash also, when the Jews were making the golden calf, Chur protested it. He said, what are you guys doing? And they killed him. The Medrash killed him. So because he gave up his life for the eagle, he merited that his grandson should build the Mishkan, which forgave the Jewish people for the building of the Egel. So over here he says, that's what the Daskim HaTosfos says, Lekach Hitzkid B'tzalul Avi Aviv, Fi Shechur Nerag Al Maiseh HaEgel, because Chur was killed for the Egel, and this is to forgive the Egel, so the Torah wants to give an honorable mention to Chur. Okay, now, what does this pasuk mean when it says, Re'ei Karasi B'Shem? See what? See? I mean, the Torah should have said, B'tzal ben Uri ben Chosh should be up to build the Mishkan. What does Re'ei mean? So the Kli Yakeh says, is, Re'ei Beruach HaKedesh She'alecha. You should see what God says to Moshe. What should you see? You should see with your greatness that he is fit for the job. That he is fit for the job of the Egel. Other Mefashim learn, it says like this. Okay, Hashem said that you're not going to do it. So he says, another Medrash says like this. Hashem showed Moshe Rabbeinu a book from Adam Arishin. And in the book of Adam Arishin it says that Bezalel ben Uri ben Chur is going to build the Mishkan. So Shem said to him, Re'ei, look into the book. And you see already he's predestined that he's going to do it. The Moshe Rabbeinu shouldn't think that he lost the merits. Now, Moshe Rabbeinu was asked by Hashem, do you think he's fit for it? Do you think he's fit for the job? So Moshe Rabbeinu says to Hashem, I understand. If you think he's fit, what are you asking me? Why are you asking me? If you think he's fit for the job, you need my opinion. So the Gemara says, it teaches us a lesson that you have to have humility and discuss things with other people. Even Hashem himself, when it came to the construction of the Mishkan, obviously did not need Moshe Rabbeinu's opinion if Bezalel is a good candidate or not. Nevertheless, Hashem had humility and he asked him. Number two, when you want to appoint a communal leader, you should get the public opinion about this. Now, it says, why did Hashem say to Moshe Rabbeinu later on, we'll see, you know, discuss this with the Jews? He said, because the Gemara says Bezalel was 13 years old. So you can imagine a 13-year-old kid didn't have a big beard. He didn't look very distinguished. So the question is, Hashem said, because he's not distinguished, he didn't look that distinguished, so Moshe Rabbeinu said, you better discuss it with the Jews before that, to make sure they agree, otherwise they're going to say, who you appointed this little kid over here? So therefore, to make sure that they should do it. Okay, and that's at that aspect. Okay, then it says, V'amali eisei ruach alikim, Hashem says, I'm filling him up with the Spirit of God, v'chochma uv'tvuna v'das, which is again the three characteristic traits of intellect, chochma, bina, and das, uv'chol malacha, and to do any type of work. Any type of work, not only, because we're going to see in a second what the Mefarshim explain, lachshev machshaves, he says, to think, lachshev machshaves, to weave designs, las is to work, bazov, bekesev, and necheshes, with gold, silver, and copper. And the Mefarshim explain, what is this uniqueness over here? He said, I think it's the Ramban, one of them says that, yeah, the Ramban explains, why is Hashem telling him he knows how to work with gold and silver and copper? If you think about it, the Jews are coming now from a slave mentality. What did they do in Egypt? They built buildings. They weren't silversmiths, they weren't goldsmiths, they weren't coppersmiths. They didn't work with these materials. So the Ramban says, look at the uniqueness of Bezalel. This is what Hashem is telling Moshe Rabbeinu. That even though they were slaves in Egypt and they never dealt with these types of materials, yet Bezalel has the wisdom to know how to work even with materials that he never dealt with before. And that's a special talent that he had. So, Loilamdu Melechus Kesev Izov, and he never saw it, and he said, it's a Pella, it's the Ramban writes, it's a wonder that you can find such a guy that's able to do all these things.
I give him godly spirit.
Yes.
Well, that's a big blessing, no?
Yeah, anytime a person has brains, it's a godly blessing. No, but you can imagine a 13-year-old kid.
But he's 13 years like of age, and now you compare me?
Godly spirit.
I don't know.
I mean, if Rivka got married 3.5 years, 13 years is like whatever.
Yeah, they were much more mature then than they are now, but that's not saying too much. To say they're more mature than today, what does it say in the pasuk? In pasuk Gimel, Vamale also, I filled them. Hashem says, I gave them the chokhmah. Of course. Yeah, but I'm saying he merited it. But in fact, later on, there's a Rashi later on in Chumash, which is really a medrash. Bezalel argued against Moshe Rabbeinu, and Bezalel was right. When Moshe Rabbeinu later on gave the order of the Mishkan, so Moshe Rabbeinu told Bezalel, you first make the Kelim, and then the Mishkan. First make the appliances, and then the building. So Bezalel said to Moshe Rabbeinu, Rebbe, you don't put the appliance and then build the house around the kitchen. You first build the house, and then you bring the appliances in. He said, where are you going to do it? Where are you going to put the appliances if you make the Ard and the Mishkan, I mean the Mizbeach and the Menorah, what are you going to do with them?
So we can argue with
so them. One second. So no, listen. Moshe Rabbeinu said to him, first make the Kelim and then the Mishkan. Bezalel said to Moshe Rabbeinu, hey, I'm sorry, Rebbe, it's not the way to do it. So Moshe Rabbeinu said, Bezalel, you're right, because that's the way Hashem told it to me. Hashem told it to me the way you said it. So, in other words, he was
testing him.
No, I don't know if he's testing him, but
you can argue what the Torah scholars regarding Torah. Then is that right?
Sure, sure. Usually, the scholars are wrong. Okay, and the Sipurna just adds, because he says, I want you to understand also that hey, what should Moshe Rabbeinu see? That I didn't call him Bezalel for no reason. He's taki in the image of God. Bezalel Kel, in the image of God. Okay. Uvacharashis Evan Pasikei. Uvacharashis Evan in stone cutting for settings. Uvacharashis 8 in wood carving. Lasis b'chol malacha to perform every craft. In other words, some people, you know, are in the weaving department. Some people are in the metals department. Bezalel knew it all. And that's what the Pasuk is telling us, the greatness of Bezalel, that he knew. And he says, okay, then he says like this, Vani hine nasati ite, behold, I'm giving together with Bezalel, I'm giving him a helper. Aliyav ben Achisamach lemati Don, Aliyav, the son of Achisamach for the tribe of Don, Ubelev kochach melev nasati chochma, Hashem says, and in the heart of every wise man, I made wisdom. But also, they should do everything I command you. Okay? So, it's very interesting. Rashi says over here that why did he pick Aliyav ben Achisamach? Rashi doesn't say it here, Rashi says it later. But Rashi says, why did Hashem take Aliyav from the tribe of Don? Don, from all the tribes, was the lowest. In fact, that was the last tribe to travel in the desert. It was called the Ma'asev L'chol HaMachanis. It was the cleaning of all the other tribes. Don, in the desert, Yehuda was the first one to travel, as it says later on in the Chumash. Tribe of Yehuda was the first one to travel, because Yehuda was the greatest royalty, Malchus. Don was the last tribe to travel.
I thought they were all equal.
Yeah, but Don was the last trip. So anybody that lost something along the way, Don found it. Don was like the caretakers. People got stranded behind. The kids were too lazy to walk. Don caught up with them. So it says, why did Hashem take from the greatest tribe and from the lowest tribe? Hashem took from Dan. Because he wants to teach us, number one, that every Jew is equal. And he says, even though, the Medrash says, even though Aliyah was as smart as Bezalel and he also knew all this, and that's why he said, V'itay with him, meaning he was equal, nevertheless, he is the helper, Bezalel is the main guy, and he is the lower one. Now, because, why didn't God make Bezalel himself the leader? Why does Hashem need a helper? So it says to show that all the tribes are equal in this respect. When it comes to building God's home, everybody is equal. If Yehuda itself was represented by Bezalel ben Uri ben Chulam Atta Yehuda, he could come to the level of Gaiva. He's thinking nobody is as great as him. So Hashem said, you know what? We're going to give you a guy with Dan. He's going to be your equal, you know, and he's going to teach us that there's no, in the presence of God, everybody's equal.
Rabbi.
Yeah.
To your great knowledge, and I'm not being funny, did God ever have to settle an argument about Jews being equal when maybe there were a few who said, how can they be equal to them? They're great Jews. These are Cornish. Did that ever happen in the Torah where the argument came up and God took sides?
Does nine Moshe Rabbeinus make a minion? Nine Moshe Rabbeinus make a minion? No. Right? If you have nine Moshe Rabbeinus in a room, do you have a minion?
No.
If you have 10 yukels in a room, you have a minion?
Yeah.
Okay. What does that mean? Moshe Rabbeinu was not counted for more than one Jew and not less than a Jew. And the lowest Jew is not less than one Jew, not more than one Jew. In many respects, all Jews are equal. And I really should elaborate on this because this teaches us the lesson of what Hashem is teaching us with the Mishkan. Every Jew is equal. No Jew can be counted for more than one person. No Jew is counted for less. And therefore, as we learned at the beginning of Kisisa, by Machzis HaShekel, Hashem said the rich don't give more, the poor don't give less, everybody is equal. That is in the essence of the person. Okay? Then every person is created as an individual, because each person has their own mission to fulfill in life. The Yukul has his mission in life, and Moshe Rabbeinu has his mission in life. Okay? And by the way, this is a very interesting halacha, which is brought down in reference to a Sefer Torah. We know, we said many times, the word Yisrael is an acronym for Yesh, Shishim, Ribu, Eis Yisrael Torah. There's 600,000 letters in the Torah, meaning every Jew has a letter, okay? Even though there's not 600,000 letters in the Torah, it's 305,800 something, but in a roundabout way, there's 600,000 letters in the Torah. In the laws of a Sefer Torah, it's a very paradoxical law. If one letter is missing, a tiny yud, okay, is missing anywhere in the Torah, the whole Torah is not kosher. So the question is, the yud is at the end of Chumash Dvarim, so therefore the Chumash Bereishis is not kosher. What is, like, you know, it's so far apart. The answer is, one Jew is missing, everybody is missing. Yet, there's an interesting halacha. When you write letters in a Sefer Torah, two letters are not allowed to touch. If two letters touch, the Sefer Torah is also not kosher. That means sometimes you have like a lamed goes up, you know, if it touches the foot of the top letter or the long chaf that touches the top of the next letter, whatever. If two letters in a Sefer Torah touch, the Sefer Torah is not kosher. What does that mean? Every Jew is his own individual. No two Jews touch. Meaning, from one side, every Jew is equal, which means if one Jew is missing, the whole Jewish, everybody's missing. And from the opposite side, yet the halacha is that two letters touching, that means if you don't have your individuality, you're not a kosher Sefer Torah either. So, in individuality missions, in individual missions, God created some people to be the intelligent ones. Some God created people to be the hand ones, you know, the feet ones, the stomach ones, the toenail ones, or whatever. Now, what's better, a sick head or a healthy foot?
A healthy foot. Sick head can't be better, Rabbi.
What? I'm bringing out a point, sir. What? What's better? Okay, 1 second. In my language, what I'm talking about is if you have a person who's supposed to be the head, but he's not fulfilling his mission, mm-hmm. so he's a sick head. Mm-hmm. But then you have a person who's a foot. Okay, he's only a foot, not the head, but he's fulfilling his mission. He's doing what God expects him to do, so then he's a healthy foot. So which one is better? It's a very difficult thing to say. The point is, this person, and his level is 100%, and on this person's level, he's 6, so he's only 50%. So, when the individual is judged by Hashem, Hashem doesn't say, you're a foot and you're a head. Hashem doesn't compare the feet to the head. Hashem doesn't compare Don to Yehuda. All Jews in one aspect are equal. Then when it comes to the individual mission of the Jew, Hashem says, you have your mission. I don't care, you could be a toenail. But if you're a perfect toenail, then your mission was accomplished 100%. And that's all I need from you. That's what Hashem wants from the toenail. Hashem doesn't want the ankle to be a head. Hashem doesn't want the ankle to see and to smell and to talk. Hashem wants the ankle to help you walk. That's the mission of the ankle. When the ankle is healthy and doing the mission, that ankle fulfilled its mission in creation.
So this is like according to the call that you have in life?
Yeah.
The tshuva?
The call is tshuva.
Now let's say the person is...
The famous Reb Zusha Anapoli, who is a disciple of the Mizritchi Magid. No, that's fine. Disciple of the Mizritchi Magid. Mm-hmm. Yeah? Said that when I die after 120 years and I come up to heaven, they're not going to beat me up why I wasn't the Rebbe, the Magid. He said, they don't expect me to be my... What they're going to hit me is why I wasn't Zusha. Meaning, he said, they're going to beat me up why I wasn't what I should be. Understand? Every person has to be. So from one aspect, in the construction of the Mishkan, like we said before, Hashem picked gold, silver, and copper. Copper represents the sinners. Gold represents the Bali Tshuva. Silver represents the Tzaddikim. The spices we just learned, Chalbana stunk. Yet, if one of the Chalbanas was missing, the whole Ketaitis would be Chayiv Misa. The guy that brought it would get capital punishment. And it comes to the construction of the Mishkan. Yeah? Certain aspects of the construction of the Mishkan, Hashem says, I want everybody to be equal. The Machzis of Shekel, everybody's equal. The other Machzis of Shekel, we learned that they made the sockets for the boards. Every person was equal. The foundation of the Mishkan, everybody's the same. Afterwards, a rich person has to give a rich man sacrifice. A poor man has to give a poor man sacrifice. And the Gemara says, Asher Shehikriv Karban Ani, a rich man who brought a poor man sacrifice, the Gemara says, La Yotze Yedei Chayvasi, did not fulfill his obligation. If the poor man brought it, 100% perfect carbon. The rich man brings the poor man's carbon. He didn't fulfill his obligation.
The opposite is
okay. A poor man brings a rich man, that's fine.
Wondering the subject of it, what if you have a sick head? I mean, the leader is sick and he's not a good leader. The rest of the body suffers too.
Correct.
So what, you get rid of the head? You get rid of the sick head?
What happens when the body is sick? The head's also affected. Later on in Parshas Vayikra, when the Torah speaks about the sin offerings, if the Jews sin, the Torah says, "Asimim b'roshechem," literally means, "I will put the appoint the letters, the leaders as your head." Asimim, I'll place them b'roshechem. Yeah, Hashem told Moshe Rabbeinu, pick leader when the Jews complained for a change. Hashem told Moshe Rabbeinu said, "God, I can't handle these Jews anymore. Okay, he wanted to retire." Hashem said, "You're not retiring. Get helpers." Okay, get assistance. And Hashem said, "Vasim im b'roshech." Huh?
That's not
Yitro. Well, that late, I'm saying when the Jews complained, this was Yisro was a different story. So he said, "Vasim im b'roshechem." Literally means I will place them. Some I will place them on your head. Rashi quotes the Medrash says, "Don't read it Vasim im b'roshechem, but Vashamechem b'roshechem." The sins of the Jewish people, God is going to blame the head. The head gets blamed. Understand? For everything. Why? Because they're the heads. They're supposed to be responsible. Now, again, I don't want to... But anyway, to answer the question that he didn't ask, the point is that, from one respect, everybody in the Mishkan is the same. From one respect, every person had their mission. Hashem picked Bezalel and Don, Yehud and Don, Aliyav and Bezalel, to show that everybody is equal. What?
Isn't this one of the revolutionary uplifting concepts that the Bolshevik brought? Because
everybody is the same.
Before
the Baal Shem Tev, it says there was Avos Yisrael because of Torah. You knew Torah, they loved you. They didn't know Torah, they didn't love you. So Baal Shem Tev said, Avos Yisrael, because he's a Jew. I said many times, it's remarkable, somebody once came to the Rebbe, and the Rebbe told him to say it, Dvar Torah, you know, or to ask or whatever. So he said, he doesn't understand the Gemara at the end of Chagiga. The Gemara says, Peshe Yisrael, Malaya Mitzvahs Kerimen. That the sinner, Peshe Yisrael, is not only a sinner. Peshea means she is negligent. It's the lowest type of sin is Peshea. There's Chet, there's Oven, there's Pesha. Okay? We say it in Yom Kippur Davening. So, Pesha is the worst type of sin, in negligent, intentional sins. And the Gemara says, a Jewish sinner is full of mitzvahs like a pomegranate. Pomegranate has a lot of seeds. So the Gemara says, a Jewish sinner is full of mitzvahs like a pomegranate. So this person asked the Rebbe, if he's a Jewish sinner, how can he be full of mitzvahs? Logical question. So the Rebbe said, I also don't understand the Gemara. What I don't understand is, if he's full of mitzvahs, how can he be called a sinner? It depends how you look at it. One second. So the Baal Shem Tev said that Avos Yisrael has to come because he's a Jew. Because he has a neshama. Like we said, in that respect, everybody's equal. There's no difference between one Jew and another Jew. What?
Rabbi.
Yeah.
I'm going to pose a very, very big question for you about being equal. When I was on Guam...
All men are created equal, some are more equal than others.
Wait a minute.
But get to the point. Don't tell us the story.
You're going to kick out of this. I was in the middle of the Pacific Ocean. We had secured the island of...
Hurry up.
...the Marines.
Yeah.
And came Shabbos. A couple of Jews started to talk. We want to have a minion Shabbos. It's Shabbos.
So they got the goyim to make the minion.
Protestant chaplain.
Yeah.
To run the services in English.
Okay.
Now, Rabbi, it came to laying the Torah, and the Jews that were there, there was a platoon of Jews, about 18,
no.
And we all wanted an Aliyah, but we all didn't get the Aliyah.
The Protestant got the Aliyah.
There was a Levi, and all the rest, Yeshuas, didn't know how to say a prayer. The Kayan got the Aliyah, the Levi got the Aliyah.
And the Protestant got the Aliyah.
I got an Aliyah. I was one of the seven that
okay,
got the
Aliyah. That's great.
Sure.
Now,
but I know we weren't equal to the Kayan and the Levi.
Right, you got it. Now, the Arachayim, right? Yeah, the Arachayim says, V'amali eisei ruach alikim, the Arachayim says a very interesting statement, that God gives wisdom to ones that have it already. In other words, it wasn't that Hashem made Bezalel. Of course, everything Hashem makes. But Bezalel was a brilliant person. And Hashem filled him with more brilliance because he was a vessel for it. He says, Shein HaKadosh Baruch Hu Neisin Chochma Ala Lami Sheyesh Bei Chochma. It's like the Gemara says an expression. The rich get, it's a Gemara's expression. The rich get richer and the poor get poorer. The Gemara says that statement.
Really?
Yeah. So the Chochm, because he had Chochm, Hashem gave. Okay.
More banging on the table.
Now.
Poor, I got poorer. I didn't get richer.
Pasuk Zayin. Now Hashem says what they have to do. Eis Eil Meyed, they have to make the Eil Meyed, which was, again, the place where Hashem spoke to Meshir Abeinu. There's a Adon La'edus, they have to make the ark for the Luchis that were called Luchis La'edus, because they were a testimony that Hashem gave the Torah to the people. There's a Kapedus, and the cover. The Eisk, the Asher Olav, which is the cover which was on the Arden that we learned about before with the Kruvim. The Eisk, Kol Kalei Ha'el, and all the utensils of the tent. As a Shulchan, as Kela, as a Menera, Tereh, as Kol Kalei, the Shulchan and its vessels, the Menera and its vessels, the Eis Mizbach, HaKteres, and the Mizbeach that they had for the Kteres, which was the inner Mizbeach, which was small. The Eis Mizbach, Ha'el, as Kol Kalei, the big Mizbeach for the Karbonis. And all its utensils, Vesakir, Veskane, and the wash place in the base of it, the wash basin in the base of it, Ves Bigdei Hasrod. And here is an argument between Rashi and Ramban, what Bigdei Hasrod means. Rashi learns Bigdei Hasrod means the garments that covered the utensils of the Mishkan. When the Jews traveled in the Mishkan, they had to cover the utensils. They shouldn't get dusty. So there were special garments made to cover the utensils. So that's what Rashi says it means, Big Day Hasrod. Why? Because right away in the Pasuk it says, there's Big Day HaKedesh L'Aron HaKohen. The holy garments. So obviously the Big Day Hasrod are not the holy garments. Okay? But the Ramban argues in Rashi, and the Ramban says, it all refers to Big Day HaKedesh. And they're just different types of utensils, of garments of the Kayanim. You know, some of the lower level Kayanim, like he says, Big Day Asrod refers to the regular Kayan's garments. Big Day Akedish, La'aran Akayan, is Big Day Van of L'Kayan, is the other, even though it says Big Day Van of L'Kayan, but Rashi, the Ramban learns it also means the garments of Aaron's kids, also. So the argument between Rashi and Ramban, what it means.
And the
next passage. What? Okay, then it says, the Eisham and the Mishcha, the oil, these are all the things that they had to make. The Eisham and the Mishcha, the Kteris, the Samim, and the Kteris, for the Samim, the Kedish, Kechol Asher Tzivisicha Yasu. Everything I commanded you, you have to do. So this part, these few psukim are discussing the appointment of Bezalel and Aliyav to get done everything that the Eibishter wanted in the construction of the Mishkan. Okay? Meaning, everything had to be done in the way of Kedusha, and it had to be made, it says, Lakedish, meaning, everything had to be made exclusively for the Mishkan. They were not allowed to make it for regular things and then just use it for the Mishkan. It had to be made exclusively for the Mishkan. What?
Last time you said to Shemin HaMashiach, you said that Moshe made it, and we have left over one of the things that Amish.
Yeah, but it says Moshe Rabbeinu Taka didn't make it. Moshe Rabbeinu brought the goods for it. You're right, I mean, it's a very good point, but it says.
Yeah, you said that's the reason because of him that it survived.
Right, but therefore he had to bring his. The Rechaim explains before also.
So he bought it.
He bought the stuff, but the one that actually made it was Bezalel and Aliyev. Oh, and the workers that they had.
What did they make? The anointment oil?
Yeah, that's what you're talking about.
Yes.
Last time you said it.
Okay, next pasuk starts like this, and here there's a bunch to talk on. Vayem Hashem HaMeishah Leimer. Va'at Tadabel B'nei Yisrael Leimer. You should speak to the Jews and say, Achaz Shepseisei Tishmeru. But you have to keep Shabbos. So right away, Rashi comments from the Gemara that even though, what's the connection now to Shabbos? That even though I commanded you to build the Mishkan, which is the holiest thing, yet you have to keep Shabbos, meaning you're not allowed to desecrate Shabbos for the construction of the Mishkan. Okay? Meaning, even though you're rushing to build the Mishkan, to get it done quicker that Hashem should rest upon the Jewish people, but nevertheless, you cannot work in the construction of the Mishkan on Shabbos. Now, why does it say Va'ata Tadaber al Bnei Yisrael? It's a funny expression. The Klayoker asks, the Patrik Shevi, Emeshem Ameshalemer, Dabel Bnei Yisrael, like all the other mitzvahs. Right, what does it say? Emeshem Ameshalemer, Dabel Bnei Yisrael. Here it's Va'ata Tadaber al Bnei Yisrael. Of course, Va'ata Tadaber. Hashem is speaking to Mesha, who else is speaking to the Jews? Dabel Bnei Yisrael, which means Mesha Bnei should speak to the Jews. He says, Shabbos is your merit. Why? It says in the Medrash that Moshe Rabbeinu, Pari, gave the Jews in Egypt one day off. You have to remember, this is before Matan Torah, this is before Mara, when the Jews were commanded on Shabbos. There was no Shabbos in Mitzrayim. But Pari told him, the Medrash says, Pari gave Moshe Rabbeinu one day off for the Jews. And Moshe Rabbeinu picked Shabbos. So Moshe Rabbeinu, that's why it's interesting. In the Shachris of Shabbos, what do we say? Yismach Moshe b'matnas chalkei. Why do we mention Moshe on Shabbos? So the Medrash says, here, Moshe rejoiced in the gift of his portion, for you called him a faithful servant. What does this have to do with Shabbos? It says, because Moshe Rabbeinu got the concept of Shabbos. In Mitzrayim yet. So therefore, Hashem says, in the construction of the Mishnah of the Mishkan, you, who are the instigator of Shabbos, you have to speak to the Jews and tell them to keep Shabbos. Which means Shabbos is holier even than the Mishkan. But the fact, and this I don't know how much of it we're going to get to today, the fact that the Torah is comparing the Mishkan to Shabbos, we learn out in Parshas Vayakha later, also another, the Torah says, Moshe Rabbeinu gathered all the Jews together and said, keep Shabbos, and then he told them how to build the Mishkan. So over there again, the Gemara asks, what's the connection? And again, to tell us that the building of the Mishkan doesn't desecrate Shabbos. But we do it the opposite way also. How do we know what's forbidden to do on Shabbos? Those things that were done in the Mishkan. The Gemara learns out from these similarities, connections of the connection of the two psukim, Shabbos and Mishkan. So the Gemara learns out that from what was done in the Mishkan, it's considered work on Shabbos. If it wasn't done in the Mishkan, it's not considered work on Shabbos. What is this connection between Mishkan and Shabbos, that I would think that you desecrate Shabbos? The fact that Hashem had to say to Moshe, don't desecrate Shabbos, meaning that even Moshe Rabbeinu would think, maybe we should desecrate Shabbos for the construction of the Mishkan. And therefore Hashem had to tell him, no. Right? Hashem didn't have to tell Moshe Rabbeinu, don't desecrate Shabbos to do whatever. Because even Moshe Rabbeinu could think that you have to desecrate Shabbos to build the Mishkan, because the Mishkan is very holy. So what is this connection between the Mishkan and Shabbos? And it's much longer than 5 minutes, but the point, and we'll elaborate Mishkan next week on it more. Shabbos is the purpose of creation, and the Mishkan is the purpose of creation. And therefore Shabbos and Mishkan are the same thing. What does this mean? Not only, there's a lot of aspects to this, but just go through the shorter ones first. Shabbos, if you extrapolate it for the 1,000 years, Shabbos is the concept of Mashiach. The 7,000th year, Elef HaShvi, the 7,000th year that we say in davening and benching, Rachaman, Yanchilein Eliyem Shikula Shabbos, that's the ultimate level of Shabbos. Mizmer Shiliyema Shabbos refers to the ultimate level of Shabbos, which is the 7,000th year. So obviously the purpose of creation is for the sake of Mashiach, which is Shabbos. The ultimate purpose of creation is for God to reveal himself in the world. Where does God reveal himself in the world? In the Mishkan, that's God's home. V'shachanti b'seichem, is in the Mishkan. So the Mishkan represents the ultimate purpose of creation for God's revelation, and the concept of Shabbos represents the concept of Mashiach, which is the ultimate purpose of creation. But it really goes, so to speak, much higher than that, of what the concept of Shabbos is, what the concept of Mishkan is, and why Shabbos is still higher than Mishkan. Shabbos is a much higher level than Mishkan. That's why, again, for instance, we learned already, Bris Milah pushes off Shabbos. Why does Bris Milah push off Shabbos? Okay, the Torah says so. Be'etzem ayyem hazeh, even Shabbos. But why does Bris Milah push off Shabbos? So we learned, because Bris Milah is higher than Shabbos. Shabbos is 7, which is time, 7 days of the week. Bris Milah is 8, which is supernatural. Bris Milah is higher than Shabbos. So Shabbos gets pushed off. Mishkan doesn't push off Shabbos.
They try to make it the smallest excuse, so they don't do it on Shabbos.
Who says?
Lots of people. They look for excuse, so they don't do it.
Speak louder, honey. Don't you speak. We'd like to hear you too.
When are you leaving?
He didn't hear you.
I heard him say, when are you leaving?
Oh, you heard, so how come you didn't hear her?
He spoke loud. I'm not insulting her. She's a wonderful pupil. Let her speak a little bit louder.
Thank you. People don't, if it has to be in Shabbos, it has to be in Shabbos. Some people today don't like to make a bris in Shabbos because there's a lot of chilul Shabbos from people that are not firm coming. That's a whole halacha controversy by itself, if you push off a bris. But according to halacha, a bris has to be in Shabbos. Why? Because bris milah is greater than Shabbos. But obviously the fact that the Mishkan doesn't desecrate Shabbos shows that Shabbos is greater than the Mishkan. So Mitzvah next week is late. But next week we'll discuss what Shabbos is, Mishkan is, and the comparison between the two.